This class is a continuation from a couple of weeks ago. I think Hanukkah we didn't learn, and before Hanukkah we did something about Hanukkah because someone asked for it. And then the week before that we had a discussion about wrestling and boxing. Do you remember this?
Yes.
No, not the someone else lost. No, no, no.
No.
This fellow Yuri Foreman is the world champion. I told you, he went around a month ago. And then there's this other fellow Salita who lost a couple of weeks ago. He almost made it through the first round. He didn't do very well. Okay, and I told you then that part of the issue in terms of a person owning their body, not owning their body, or to what extent we can make decisions about our bodies, one of the things that I wanted to talk about was elective surgery or cosmetic surgery. So let's begin. In 1964, Hanukkah time, and now I'm surmising right now, and I'll show you why I'm guessing that this is the case, a rabbi from Borough Park, actually not just a rabbi, a rebbe, Hasidic rebbe from Borough Park, asked a question, as far as I can tell, to at least three different rabbis. Why do I assume this? Because I have a couple of different answers, all given within a very short amount of time, apparently to the same individual about the same case. In source number three we have over here, a question that was posed to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Im na'ara muteret liyafot atzma, Is a girl allowed to pretty herself by doing surgery which would be damaging to the body? What's chabala? Is that they're going to cut something in order to do surgery. That's what surgery is. And the date over here is Kaf Adar Tuf Shin Kaf Dalet. So of course you're going to tell me Kaf Adar is not really near Hanukkah. Nonetheless, when we look at the next one and number four, the question was asked to someone known, the book is called the Cheltiot Yaakov, of Yaakov Breisch, who lived in Switzerland. Im mutar lebetula la'asot la'atzma nituach al hachotem liyashro ulahaktino. Here the question is a little bit clearer. Is a girl allowed to have surgery on her nose to straighten it and make it smaller? We'll see soon. And now he writes, "Kavod yididi harav hagon hatzadik hamifursam." I don't know what the rest of those nice letters are. V'chule v'chule. He himself writes v'chule v'chule. Rav Shalom Yecheskel Shlita, who is Yechuna Rubin Halberstam Admor Chichinov. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Ka'et per Brooklyn, the Rebbe from Kitchinov, who now what? Chechenov, you know him?
I don't know
him. Ah, okay. You know the dynasty. From Chechenov, but he writes maybe with irony, but he doesn't appreciate the irony, but now from Brooklyn, so he's not really from Chechenov anymore. But he was. And over here, he doesn't give a date to when he writes this, and unless you actually look to the very end of the whole tshuva, which is all the way back on page four, the last paragraph, he signs it Tzirich Gimel Tevet Tashin Kaf Dalet. Gimel Tevet is the day after Hanukkah. We have another tshuva in source number 9, which was written to Rav Menashe Klein, and here he dates it. The question is, Isha sheyesh la bipaneha mum shel yofi, if somebody has on her face some kind of a mum, some kind of damage, imuteret lasot nituach plasti, can she have plastic surgery? And the date over here is Chet Lahadlaka Hey Tuf Shin Kaf Dalet, which is the day before Rabbi Breisch answered the question. My presumption is that all three are talking about the same girl. And Rav Moshe, as you see, it took him a couple more months to get to it, or he may have been asked afterwards. I don't know exactly when he was asked, but based on nuances within the questions, having read all three of these from beginning to end, I'm quite confident that all three questions are posed by the same person. The question was posed to him. The background, when you read a little bit more, you will find out that this is a girl who has been unable to get married. And one of the reasons given is because she is not that attractive. And objectively, again, because you can tell me I can't use the word objectively right now, I have to use the word subjectively, but people would say objectively her nose is too big and too crooked. What does he mean, too big or too crooked? So you'll yell at me and say, no, that's subjective. Maybe in some cultures that would be considered very beautiful. Nonetheless, in Borough Park, at least where the question seems to emanate from, for all you know, it's his second cousin, three times removed. You don't know who's asking him, but somebody has asked this Rebbe, and this Rebbe now turns around and asks a couple different people. And one of the things which is interesting, which I want to point out, is if you go to source number four, there's, I put something in bold over here by Rabbi Breisch in Zürich. He writes, Lefim, you see that around the third paragraph over here on source four on page two, where I put it in bold. It says, Lefi mi'ut yediyati, he goes, as far as I can tell, lo matzati b'sifrei ha'tshuvot misha diber bazeh. He goes, as far as I can tell, nobody has ever answered this question regarding plastic surgery, which is also then very interesting. Remember last week we talked about the Septuagint, where they put 72 different rabbis in different rooms and said, all translate the Torah by yourself. Over here, without any kind of background, because no one's written about it, at least three different rabbis are asked the same question, and none of them can look at what the other one said because no one has written about this question as of yet. Many times in Sheilot V'Tshuvot, when questions are asked of rabbis, you have precedent. And when you have precedent, you can look at two or three different people dealing with the same type of question. Maybe there's a nuance in this particular case that may lean it one way or the other, or perhaps there is an opinion of this particular rabbi who may lead it one way or the other. But over here, we do have what would seem to be a new question being posed that no one's ever dealt with. Now, incidentally, that's not true. Somebody had dealt with it already, but he missed it. And for that matter, all of them missed it. But they didn't have Google, and they just didn't happen to look where it was dealt with. The person who created the field, with all due respect to the Rambam, but the person who created the field of what today perhaps would be called medical ethics was the former chief rabbi, Jacobowitz. Okay, I'll say the Lord then, if you're ready. We have fans over here. Now we have the second coming of the Lord, right? Now, Rabbi Sachs has also become a lord. In 1961, he addressed the American Society of Facial Plastic Surgeons at a symposium called Religious Views on Cosmetic Surgery. So for some reason, these rabbis didn't get the papers that were delivered at that particular conference, which we could excuse them for not doing due diligence and checking all the medical literature and finding that. Although it's true today, if you have Google, then somebody could look up and find such an article as well. This I would not have found either. The only reason I found it is because I found a wonderful article, which is called The Jewish Approach to Cosmetic Surgery by a doctor named Daniel Eisenberg. And if anybody wants a copy of it, you can email me, because I actually found a copy online. The only problem was it didn't have any footnotes on it. So I went searching for him. I found his email, and I emailed him. I said, your footnotes are missing. And then he sent me a PDF of the whole article, which would have saved me a great deal of time. But the article is quite good. So let's go back now to the beginning and see how Rav Moshe deals with it, even though you could tell me that historically he's the fourth one to deal with the question. By the way, when Rabbi Jacobowitz spoke at the conference, he said right away, I'll quote to you from this article, after explaining that no responsa had yet been written on the topic. So that was in fact true. He dealt with the question of whether one may undergo plastic surgery with the purpose of improving one's physical appearance. and later on this made into his book, which is called Jewish Medical Ethics. Yes. We'll see what it is. Let's take a look at source number three now. Rav Moshe writes, Nishalti b'na'ara, shirotza liyafot atzma, kidei sheyikfitzu aleha l'kadsha. Okay, so what's the problem right now? She's single, and she's convinced. That's very important. She's convinced because of the way that she looks, the odds of her being able to get married have been diminished. And she's convinced that if she does a little fixing, renovations, is that what we call it? Then it will help her, what?
She puts him.
Then she would improve her chance of getting married. Al yidei ma shehim tziu ata harofim, al yidei nituach shehu chabala bigufa. So the... Just one second. That she thinks that she can improve her looks by doing surgery, which is damage to the body. That's what the doctors will do. It's chabalah. What's chabalah? Chabalah is to draw blood from someone in order to hit someone, to do damage to someone's body. This is chabalah. Imuteret mitzadi isur lechbo ba'atzmo. Is this included in the prohibition of harming one another? So that's the question that Rav Moshe deals with initially. By the way, the question asked by the Rebbe, looking at all of them, he asks two things. One question that he poses, is there a problem with damaging yourself in terms of having elective surgery? And the second question that he asks, is one permitted to put themselves in danger in terms of the dangers of surgery? Now, let's be honest and admit something. Any surgery has danger to it. And certainly any surgery where a person's going to be put out has danger to it. There's a certain statistical incidence of people not making it through surgery. So over here, is a person allowed to put themselves in danger? Now let's think about a different scenario. Let's say a person's heart fails, and the doctors think that by doing an immediate bypass, they can save their life. So would the rabbi now be saying, well, I'm not sure if you're allowed to damage yourself? No. In that case, you would certainly be allowed. For what reason? You're allowed to save somebody's life. Over here, we're not really talking about saving somebody's life, unless you want to argue with me on that. You'll tell me that being single is like no life whatsoever. Should I keep saying that or no? Then, keep trying, it won't help. Over here, why would you be allowed to put yourself in a situation of danger? So those are the two-pronged question that was posed. Are you allowed to damage yourself? Does a person own their body to make a decision that they want to, which means, am I even allowed to do anything to myself? Forget about danger. The second question is, am I allowed to put myself in a situation of danger if this is the benefits that I get out of it? Yes. Jane, you've been so patient.
If you're not allowed to put yourself in danger, then why are women allowed to get pregnant? And doesn't that influence the whole area of contraception? I mean, more women died in childbirth than from cosmetic surgery.
Percentage-wise, on the
women's plan. You know, that's a terribly dangerous thing.
Mm-hmm. So
does that, should they use that
they do use that, and they say, therefore, a woman's not obligated to have children, because they couldn't put the obligation. On the other hand, the Torah does create a mitzvah and says that there's a mitzvah to populate the world. So therefore, it seems to be that the cost-benefit over here outweighs the potential side effects. What's the second question?
The second question is, I'm trying to understand what the situation is. Since cosmetic surgery did not exist in the time of the Rambam, what was the concern about injuring yourself? Were there religious sects that, like,
The case of the Rambam is very different. Look at source number one. Asur l'adam l'chvol bein ba'atzmo bein b'chaveiro. You're not allowed to damage somebody, either yourself or someone else.
But why would somebody damage them? In what context would somebody biblically be damaging
them? The Rambam over here is really taking it from the Gemara, and it's just saying a person doesn't own their body to be able to tell somebody, go ahead and hit me or something like that, without any kind of benefit to it. Yes.
Thinking you can't get married and saving your life with a heart operation.
Okay, you want somebody.
Say somebody has a disfigurement. Uh-huh. Nothing to do with being married. Just they're scared to go out. People will stare at them.
Okay, very good. Very good.
Bad.
Very good. Very good. So, again, we're going to have a little bit of difficulty in terms of the disfigurement. And in terms of the objective versus subjective, meaning is this really a disfigurement? Is there such a thing as an objective disfigurement? That's one question, which I'm not answering right now. But you add another factor in it, that the person themselves feel that they can't go out, and what kind of factor is that? So let's put that on the side for a second, and that will be addressed. Yes?
No, and also, I mean, you can take it one step further. Like, there was that article in the paper, Vlad, did you read that? I'm sure you know whatever, about the boy that was so badly injured last year in the war, and now he's going to Denver to have cosmetic surgery. And he said, I don't know why I need it. I don't need a nose. And his wife, you know, who he married the day before, said, no, I want him to have a nose. So, also
I didn't see
that,
the article.
Like, whether is it you? Is it, does someone else have the, you know,
okay.
The
okay.
What about his other, you know?
Correct. That may be a factor. So let's look at where Moshe continue within his question over here. And he says, now doctors have an ability of doing some kind of surgery. Is this allowed or not allowed? He goes to the Gemara and Baba Kama that most of us saw a couple weeks ago, which was the source for the whole discussion on Chabalah Ba'atzmo, on a person doing damage to themselves. And he writes, Vinei betosfot Baba Kama, So he starts out with a possible prohibition, but I want to cut through the possible prohibition and go straight to the Rambam over here that he quotes in the next paragraph. Aval HaRambam, Hu katav b'rosh perakei b'chovel, which is the beginning of the fifth chapter of the laws of chovel, of laws of damages, b'isser hakaha la'adam kasher mi'Yisrael, shehu b'maka derech nitzayon, u'lechad girsa derech bizayon ayin sham. So, let's ayin sham. Just let's take a look there. Let's take a look at source number one again. We've seen this, and we noted this in passing a couple weeks ago. Asur la'adam l'chovel bein b'atzmo bein b'chaviro. A person is not allowed to cause damage to themselves or someone else. Not only are you not allowed to do damage, which we would define as drawing blood, even striking, hitting a person of Israel, bein katan bein gadol, bein isha, bein ish bein isha, derech nitzayon. What does derech nitzayon mean? That means hitting while there is a conflict going on. Hareza over below tase. That is not allowed. In source number two, is the Sefer Mitzvot Gadol, which apparently is quoting the Rambam, because it's word for word. At the end, he writes it's from the Rambam. But you'll notice there's one word different when he quotes it. Asur l'adam l'chvo bein batzmo bein b'chaviro. There is a typo there. V'lo hachov v'bovad, el kol ma'ke adam kasher mi'Yisrael, bein katan bein gadol, bein ish, bein isha, derech bizayon, hareza over below tase. What's derech bizayon mean? To hit somebody, to damage somebody, in order to belittle them, to embarrass them. So what you have over here is either you're hitting them in the heat of conflict, or to embarrass them. Bless you. Both of these seems to be alternative readings of the Rambam. Rav Moshe says over here that some girsaot that he has seen, I didn't do enough research on this, I just saw it quoted in the Sefer Mitzvot Gadol. Some say one, some say the other, and he writes, "V'im kain be'uvda zu," in this particular case, "shachabalahu liyafuta," the damage is done in order to improve what she looks like. Not, it's not that the doctor's mad at her and takes a knife to her, and it's not that the doctor wants to embarrass her and takes a knife to her. Rather, why is the doctor taking a knife to her? Because he wants to improve the way that she looks. Hare einu derech nitzayon ubizayon. It's not either nitzayon or bizayon. Shalosh shayach ha'isur. He said, if that's the case, that one cannot say that there is a prohibition. Ve'im b'makech aviro hu rak derech nitzayon ubizayon. If by hitting your friend, it's only prohibited if it's during a real fight, and if they're playing around, they're allowed to hit one another. But it's only if it's within a real fight or real desire to embarrass one another. He writes, if that's the case, there's no reason to distinguish this in terms of damaging yourself, which was the opening clause of the Rambam. You can't hit someone else, or you can't damage yourself. Which is exactly what you said. Okay. So Rav Moshe's initial approach over here is that there's no prohibition. If there's no prohibition, then there is no problem whatsoever. Yes?
Is there a difference between the situation where she asks it to be done, or the doctor says you must have it done, and therefore, with kind of haskama on her part, he goes ahead?
Based on what Rav Moshe said, I wouldn't see the difference. Top of page 2, Ulechei Nira Mizeh, Sheyesh Latir Lenarali Afot Atzma, Af Shuidei Chabala, Kevin She'enu Derech Nitzion Bizeon, Ela Adiraba Lutovota. He says, therefore, he comes to the conclusion that should be fine. And again, he goes to another source and he writes in the end of that paragraph, Vemkein Benara Liafot Atzma, Shehu Lutovota, Uvritzona, Yesh Latir Bepshitut, Af Im Lo Nasburka Rambam Bechidusho. So what's the case over here? Okay, I'll read one more thing. Sham b'mocher chamuro parato la'akum. Shetnan afal pisha einu rishai. Over here in Bechorot, it brings the case where somebody was born with an extra finger, an extra digit. And it talks about if somebody cuts it off. And then it goes on and it continues the discussion. And it never said there, even though you're not allowed to do such a thing. Now, what's his point? There was a previous Mishnah where it talked about selling something to a non-Jew that you weren't allowed to sell for whatever the reason is. And there it says, even though you're not allowed to do it, so he says, if a couple of Mishnayot later, it gives a case, and it didn't say, even though you're not allowed to do it, what can you conclude? That you're allowed to do it. So this is another, again, Rav Moshe is looking and saying, okay, it seems to me, again, that this should be allowed. I'm not going to read the rest of it. And he repeats himself at the end, but in this case, it's certainly for her good, and therefore it's allowed. Okay. Based on this tshuva of Rav Moshe, what are you willing to allow? All elective surgery or no? Would you make a distinction on this tshuva between men and women? Okay, I tend to agree with you. I saw at least one person quote this tshuva, and he had all kinds of hesitations, which I don't know why. Rav Moshe over here seems to say there's no prohibition. And in a case where there's no prohibition, what do you conclude? That it's allowed. And that seems to be...
He deals mainly with the Chabalah.
Right.
Less with the risk of
right.
surgery.
Right.
In other words, are you allowed to endanger yourself?
Right. Right. Now again, and again, I'm willing to consider the possibility, because of the dates over here. Again, it's a couple months later. Maybe this guy got the other answers from the other two rabbis, and then he turned around and asked Rav Moshe, maybe asked him a more limited question. Again, you could say it's a coincidence. You could say it's it's really the same question. That's why I would assume it's the same person. Though Rav Moshe is answering it in Adar of that year, while the other ones are answering it in Tevet. Just one second. Right. So maybe he didn't ask him the second part, or maybe for whatever reason, that's all that Rav Moshe wanted to publish. Yes?
I think that also you have to differentiate, and I would think everything has to be done on a case-by-case basis, between someone who wants the cheekbones. You know, you do have women, or even men, who are plastic surgery addicts or whatever, as opposed to someone who really needs it. Because many years ago, that are actually disfigured. And when I was a teenager in some camp, they were talking about a girl, she was very beautiful, and they said she had a nose job, we called it a nose job,
right.
And her nose had been terribly disfigured. It was like a witch's nose,
right.
A horrible hook, and it was very disfiguring. And they said the difference in the looks and the difference in her psychological outlook
okay.
was amazing.
All that I appreciate, but I just want to cut you off and go back to what we just now said. If Rav Moshe is saying that this is fundamentally not prohibited, so what's the conclusion? That it's allowed. Now we're coming to a very interesting and important realm of Jewish law, which would therefore tell us not everything which is stupid is prohibited. There are some things which are just stupid. But if there is no prohibition on having elective surgery, then how can I say to somebody, well, the nose job I actually understand, while you tweaking or fixing something else which 99% of the population would never see, that you can't do based on Jewish law. Once there's no prohibition, I can't make up a prohibition just because I think that that other person shouldn't have surgery. Now, it could be that doctors should prevent it. There was an article written a couple of years ago, I just recall that I should have went and looked for it, where they sent models to plastic surgeons in Israel, and they went, and these girls were absolutely stunning, absolutely beautiful. Again, nobody is quote-unquote perfect in this world, and all of them went to the doctor saying, you know, I really want you to fix me up, you know, what do you suggest? And 80% of the doctors said, well, I can make this better, I can make that better. And only 20% of them said, if you were my daughter, I would send you home. Get out of here. You don't have a problem. So I'm not sure how much of this has to do with people and how much of it has to do with the doctors. I mean, I can blame the doctors as much as I can blame the crazy patients. Maybe doctors should say to certain people, sorry, you look very nice as you are. I'm not fixing anything. It doesn't justify it. But that's not the world that we live in right now. Yes?
You keep using the term elective surgery, which for me has a different meaning. It has to do with all other kinds of surgery where the person comes to the hospital and says, please do so-and-so with a medical or a non-medical problem. But cosmetic surgery is something else. Which do you mean?
Cosmetic surgery also fits in within elective surgery?
Yes, but there's other kinds of elective
surgery.
Okay,
we'll see.
Nothing to do with your appearance.
Fine, we'll see. Right now we spoke about cosmetic, but again, with a larger question, are you allowed to have surgery when it's not a life-saving situation? Rav Moshe certainly says yes, even if it's cosmetic, even if it's simply based upon a whim. And even if I don't like it, and even if the doctor's making money for no good reason over here, Rav Moshe doesn't seem to say that he wouldn't allow it. Yes?
I'm just having a little bit of a problem with this answer that you just gave this lady, only because there are elective surgeries and some cosmetic they don't just make your life a little better, but make your life a lot better. Somebody who has snoring and having elective surgery will correct it. Well, not just correct it, but makes it sleep better.
It's just fine.
Right, but as far as...
And that's elective.
I understand. Let's continue. Source number four, the Chelkot Yaakov, who again also thinks that he's the first one dealing with this question. And here he writes, and based upon the date, he was a very important post-World War II, who lived in Switzerland, based upon his answer over here, where he says it was on Gimel, did we say? Yeah, Gimel Tevet. Actually, Rav Menashe Klein beat him by a day. But as I said, until the books were actually published, it was probably a while later, in any case. He writes, okay, Kvodo, I'm right after that bold line. He writes, "Chochech b'zeh shnei chashot." When the question was posed to me, it was posed with two different parts. One, mishum da'asu l'chvol batzmo, the prohibition against damaging oneself. Two, to kol nituach b'cheskat sakana, v'asur lachnis et atzmo l'makom sakana, v'nevo l'chashash echad mishum chovo batzmo. Let's start from the beginning. So here he lays out the two problems. He right away goes to precedent. Rav Moshe did not look for precedent. Rav Moshe looked for, it was an analysis, before I can say something's prohibited, I need to know what the prohibition is. I don't see a prohibition, it's therefore de facto allowed. Over here, the way that he attacks it is he actually opens up the Shulchan Aruch, where it says bet over there, over Shulchan Aruch, Yerdeya Simen Resh Mem Aleph. It brings a case that we're familiar with, at least I think we are, where a person has a splinter. V'zeleshono. This is in the laws of Kibud Avaim. We discussed this in passing also a couple of weeks ago. If a parent has a splinter, hayakotz tachuv la'aviv lo yatzienu. The child should not take out the splinter. Why not? because that would cause them to bleed. V'lo yakiz dam. And also, in case you wanted to, do not, what is yakiz dam? Don't do bloodletting to your parents. V'lo yachtoch lo aver. And what does that mean? And don't cut off a limb. One second. Afa pisha mechuvan lerefuah. Even though there would be a medical reason for all three of these, and let's say, God forbid, a parent has a gangrene leg, right? And you live in a little town someplace, and you happen to know how to do it. So therefore, do you say, well, listen, I got to wait for someone else to come because I'm not allowed to draw blood? So over here he writes, the Shulchan Aruch writes, that if a parent has a splinter going from, I guess, less severe to more severe, going from a medical reason to take out a splinter, bloodletting, which they consider to be healthy in those days, all the way to cutting off a limb, he says the child should not be the one to do it. Uva Rama, but the Rama adds there, Vidafka Sheyesham Acher. The Rama adds, that's only if somebody else is there that can do it. Aval im ein sham acher, if there is no one else there, for whom it's ta'er and the parent is in pain, harehu makiz v'chotechlo. You are allowed to then do what? Bloodletting or cut off the limb. Kefima sheyirshu la'asot. We'll skip a little bit. He writes, demutar v'gam mitzvah lachtoch ever, gam b'li sakana rak shemitz ta'er. He didn't, so it's interesting. The Shulchan Aruch, or the Rama in this case, didn't say that the rationale that the child can do it is because it's pikuach nefesh, the person's life is in danger. What was the justification? The person was in pain. Or mitzta'er, which is mitzta'er, tsa'ar. What's tsa'ar? Tsa'ar, I guess you can say, is pain.
Suffering.
Tsa'ar. The person is mitzta'er. So therefore, the justification to cut off a limb is because somebody is in pain. Now, that's very significant. Because what's the question over here? Can I only do surgery to save a life, or can I also do surgery because somebody's in pain? So, okay. Right. So Rav Moshe says, so Rav Breish over here is saying, here we have a precedent written in the Shulchan Aruch that you're allowed to do surgery if somebody's in pain. We're not talking about a life and death situation, even if it's your own parent, which would have been an additional prohibition to it. So as far as he's concerned, this should make it really obvious, if it's not your parent and a person's in pain, that you're allowed to have surgery. Did you all like the logic that he just now used? What's the matter, Elaine?
It seems kind of like a jump, because of there's an objective, in other words, nobody would want to walk around with a,
I said gangrene, he didn't. He said a person's in pain. Okay?
But pain is...
A woman was in pain... A woman was in pain because her nose was 2 inches too long, and it took a left turn and a right turn.
It's still pain.
I think the question is how you define pain.
Good. Okay. Good. But very, very good. But what's the more important point that he's raising here? What didn't it say? Again, you have to pay attention. What didn't it say? Exactly. It didn't say because it was to save somebody's life. What it did say is because the person's in pain. So that, I'm saying, that opens the door, right, that opens the door over here for what we would then call all kinds of, and I want to go back to that word, elective surgery, because if somebody's in pain, right, and pain can take all kinds of forms, someone's in pain, here we have the Shulchan Aruch saying, not only can you have surgery, but your child can perform that surgery, because that's a good enough reason to alleviate somebody's pain. Good? Good. Because plastic surgery was not all that developed.
But there must have been other cases of elective surgery. People were doing those jobs long before the 1960s.
Right. It sometimes takes time. It sometimes takes time for somebody to ask the right rabbi who's then going to write up about it. It could be that other people were asked before. Let's continue. Yeah, we discussed that. He writes over here. It seems in this case, demutar v'gam mitzvah lachtoch ever af b'li sakana rak shemitz ta'er. V'asur lo b'yesh acher. He sounds from this, it must be a mitzvah to do it. Otherwise, why would the child be able to do it? He then goes along and quotes a Tosfot in Shabbat. And I have to go back and tell you the Tosfot Shabbat, Nun Amid Bet, Divri Amaschu Bishvil, Vizeloshon, Ovim Ein Lot Sar Acher, Elishemit Bayesh, four lines on the bottom, Bein B'nei Adam Shari, the Ein Lachatzar Gadol Mize Adkan Lishono. Let's take a look and see what he just now quoted. The Gemara, which you can find in source number 6, it's talking about a person has scabs on their body. I'm not going to talk about if this is a good idea or a bad idea. The question is, are you allowed to scrape off the scabs to make someone look beautiful? And over here it says, Savar lo kahaitana, kahaiditanya, as it was taught, Megarer adam galdei tsoa v'galdei makash al b'saro b'shvil tsa'aro. You're allowed to scrape all kinds of offensive things from your body if it causes pain. In b'shvil liyafot asur. But if you're doing it just to make yourself beautiful, then you shouldn't. V'inhu kaman svar kahaiditanya. But doesn't he agree with the opinion that says, Rochet adam panav yadav raglav b'chol yom b'shvil kono? You may want to quote this to some people, that you're obligated to take a shower, to wash yourself every single day in order to look good in front of your creator. Gemara Shabbat Daf Nun, you see, quotes it. So it goes into the thing, are you allowed to, you're not allowed to, in order to beautify yourself. Rashi then explains in source 7, Mishum liyafot tatmecha asur, why? He writes, Mishum lo yubash gever simlat isha. The reason of not beautifying yourself is why are men beautifying themselves? So just stop a second. Don't ask. Just stop a second. Tosfot, who doesn't argue with Rashi, writes, "Vishvil tsaro, v'im ein lo tsar." Well, this goes back to your question that some of you were bringing up. You know, what exactly are we talking about? What is the problem of pain, or how do you define pain? V'im ein lo tsar acher, but it doesn't cause pain. Elo shemit bayesh lelech bein b'nei adam. Shari, the ein lechatzar gadol mizeh, that if a person is embarrassed to go and be seen in public like this, which I think is the exact words that you used before, Tosfot says that's a bigger pain than any very often than real pain is, and that would be a strong enough consideration in order to allow something which the Gemara considered to be, at least according to one opinion, not allowed. Let me say this part again. The Gemara talked about some way of beautifying yourself which it considered to be problematic. Why? Rashi says because a man shouldn't go ahead and beautify himself in a way that women beautify themselves. Without getting into what exactly the case is, Tosfot says that, the guy says unless the guy's in pain. If he's in pain, then you're allowed to do the procedure. If you're not in pain just to make yourself beautiful, you can't. Which itself from the Gemara, at least according to Rashi, is a real interesting distinction. That in order to have cosmetic surgery for a man, if he's doing it because he is in pain, or there's something embarrassing, well not up to embarrassing, is it because he's in pain, would be allowed. If it's in order for cosmetic purposes to make himself more beautiful, that Rashi told us would be a problem. Tosfot then added in, but hold it a second. When we say cosmetic purposes, what is the status quo right now? Is it that he's embarrassed to walk around outside? Is he self-conscious the way that he looks? Person is self-conscious, feels a little embarrassed, feels people are looking at him. Person can have like the littlest thing on their face and feel that this is, you know, devastating, and everybody is staring at it. So therefore, right? So therefore, Tosfot says there's no bigger pain than a person feeling embarrassed. So therefore, Tosfot just now told us that embarrassment is a type of pain. This was the proof which Rabbi Breisch then mustered. First of all, he already told us elective surgery is allowed, and now he's telling us that if a person is embarrassed because of the way that they look, that's also considered to be pain, also considered to be a type of a pain. When you put those things together, you already know the direction that he is going in. Let me add a couple more considerations that he adds into this. Also writes at the end of section 5, where it's underlined. Sorry, you know what? I'll just read a little bit before that. In 3, he brings down an interesting case, Gimel, towards the top of the page, on page 3. Gimel, he writes, V'nei b'divrei Chaim, v'shelotu ish shenit labno chatzi zikno v'gabot einav. Somebody, a man, page 3, Gimel, which is the second paragraph, he writes, what about if there's a man who half of his beard turned white and the other half is dark? Is he allowed to dye his beard? Now, if any of you are going to tell me that that would be a problem because of lo tilbash, you know, beged isha, women don't dye their beards. So, okay, I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about it. So he brings down a difference of opinion in this because it's interesting. Right, but potentially, beged isha, potentially. But over here, he goes back to that Tosfot about being embarrassed. He goes back to the Tosfot about being embarrassed, and he says that if a person is embarrassed, that's considered to be pain, even though he admits that there may be a difference of opinion in this. His main reason for bringing this, which I'm not going to get into, is that he also is trying to figure out, which now he's really backing up more to the way that Rav Moshe analyzed it from the very beginning, what is the prohibition here? Is it a rabbinic prohibition? Or is it a Torah prohibition? What's the difference? Because there's an argument. Hold on. You don't understand me. Is the prohibition of doing damage to yourself, don't worry about this case right now, is the prohibition of doing damage to yourself a Torah law or a rabbinic law? So there are those who will say that in order to be mechabel ba'atzmo is a Torah law. There are those who will say it's a rabbinic law. What's the big difference between the two? We have a principle in halacha that by rabbinic laws we say, b'makom tzar lo gazru, that the rabbis did not implement a law in any application where it will cause pain. So, okay, now he's telling me that tzar is including embarrassment, so what he's playing with a little bit over here is he's trying to go back and forth, are we dealing with a rabbinic law or a Torah law? And let's get towards the very end. He writes at the end of Hay, which is the next place it's underlined, v'mkein begufo shel adam nami kishes soter amanat livnot mikri boneh, which is a wonderful phrase that he uses, which we've already seen the concept, but not through this phrase. On Shabbat, you're not allowed to do creative activity. One of the things that you can't do is to build. But what if you're knocking something down, right? Knocking down a house would be considered to be damaging and not productive. So therefore, that would be allowed technically. You didn't break the Torah law. But what if you're breaking in order to build, soter al manat livnot, so then it would be considered to be constructive. That's the phrase that he uses over here. And what he's really telling us is, why are we doing damage to this woman's nose? Why is the doctor taking a knife to her nose? He's doing it, it's soter al manat livnot. He's doing this for a positive reason, and therefore this should be completely allowed. And he writes with that, v'nifshat b'zeh sfeiko harishon. He goes, with all the things that he's brought over here, we can now conclude, as far as the first question goes, is a person allowed to do damage to their body? He says, yeah, a person is allowed. This is not considered damage. This is something that a person's allowed to do. The person's embarrassed without this. That's a good enough reason, right? Pain and embarrassment are considered to be the same. So you see the case that he built up over here, starting with the case in the Shulchan Aruch, that a person's in pain, you're allowed to cut off, you're allowed to do elective surgery. Okay. He brings that it's two different opinions. He really ends up going that there's two different opinions on this. Yeah.
What if it's something that, does this mean then that bodybuilders can take steroids and damage themselves by building up the perfect body, or somebody
Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe in his tshuva actually brings up, are you allowed to diet? Are you allowed to diet? That when you go on a diet, you're putting yourself in pain. You are causing a pain to yourself. Every time you see that food that you'd like to eat and you don't eat it, you are causing pain. So if the body that you envision yourself on having afterwards brings you more joy than the pain that you're going through right now, then it would be allowed. don't even want to hear about this. As far as I'm concerned, they're all rumors and innuendos. Let's continue. Source number 9, we'll go over to...
So you're saying, yes, you're allowed to do stupid things to damage yourself.
Yes. Tattoos are a different tattoos are a different problem. Right. She saw tattoos for non-Jews. Source number... Should have cut off his mind. I said, you know, I think sometimes society does have to protect people against themselves, especially if you're saying that it's a sickness. Let's look at source number 9. Rav Menashe Klein, who is still alive, he should live well and be healthy. He is a Holocaust survivor, born in Siget. He was a childhood friend of Elie Wiesel. And if you look at the shul in Ramat Poland, if you ever got there, you know the buildings at the end of Ramot that look like a soccer ball or something? Right after that, he has a big Beit Midrash there. He's here half the year, and the Beit Midrash is dedicated to the parents of Elie Wiesel, who gives most of his money that from Holocaust-related books, he gives it to Jewish causes, including to his old childhood friend, who I understand they even learn once a week together. Rav Menashe Klein is a very, very significant posek. He has all kinds of absolutely crazy tshuvot on the craziest things that I won't even go into right now, but let's look how he deals with this. He writes, Kavod Yadid, Yadidi Nefesh, Nechmad Benaim Harav, Hagonim Ofrisam, Gan Hadasim, Shalom Yecheskel Shraga Ruben Halbushdem Shlita Admor Mi Chechnov. Same guy? Right. This, by the way, was dated Chet Chanukah, the eighth night, which was the second day of Tevet, which means he beat the Chelkot Yaakov by he. No, I checked. I looked up on the calendar this morning. He beat the other tshuva by one day. He and probably got there a little sooner because Rav Menashe Klein lived in Borough Park, or as that's where he's half the year, and it would have been like up the block rather than coming from Switzerland. He writes, so it's interesting the way he phrases this, but it's, we'll say, Isha she eiza shinui bepaneha, v'hu mum la biyofi, kigon chotma aroch kiyotzi b'zeh, v'koshela lehizdaveg, she has something in her nose which makes it difficult for her to get married, uma odnim asla, and she is the one who is very disgusted by the way she looks. Ruotzela takein zayidei nituach plasti, hanahug bizman hazeh, shehimtziyu harofim, shechotchim min hachotim, that they cut off part of the nose, v'taknim ota, v'chitem istapik kivin dekaimelin da'os l'chvo ba'atzmo, and the question you asked is, you're not allowed to damage yourself. Shenit, the second thing you asked, sharei efshar shetavol yodei zeh lidei sakana, and... you can get into danger. V'gilal and maser rav, and within the question he asks, b'ishash estani toach alachotum aman uminei az sovelim, and he goes on to a case where somebody had surgery like this, and it didn't work out that well, and ended up having a great deal of pain and problems afterwards for the rest of her life. So so now we see that that's part of the question as well. He goes right away and he quotes a Gemara from Masechet Ketuvot, which we'll look at on the top of the next page. Mishnah, source number 10 on page number 6. Hamakadesh et isha, almanat she'in aleha nidarim. If a man marries a woman, now in a wedding, when he says hareyat mekudeshet li, he's allowed to add all kinds of clauses to it. You can rehab Gadeshitli if you buy me a new car. He's allowed to say that. You're allowed to put any kind of clause that you want. So over here it says Hareyam Gadeshitli, but he says on condition that she has no pre-existing vows. Because maybe she made all kinds of vows that she's obligated on all kinds of things that he's not aware of. So it says, Hamakadeshet Isha al-minat, on condition, She'ein aleha nidarim, V'nimtzu alein darim. What would you say this now should be the conclusion? He says, on condition she doesn't have a vows, and he finds that she has vows. What rabbis, what would you say? Right, because it was on condition, and now the condition was not fulfilled. Eina mikudeshet, right? So that should not be a surprise. Kansas stam, without saying almanat, without saying on condition. V'nimtzet aleh nidarim, somebody married somebody, and finds out that she has all kinds of nidarim, teitzeh shelo b'ktuva. Now, again, the Gemara is going to go and say, what kind of nidarim are we talking about? But it says the marriage is not annulled, but she loses the ktuva because there was some misrepresentation over here. But again, we will be talking about a case where the vows that she has upon her will end up impacting their lives together. Leave that because that's not important for us. Almanat she'ein ba mumin, on condition that she has no disfigurements on her body. Now, some of you can ask, maybe he should have checked. I guess none of you are going to ask that. He says, we're not talking about him right now. Slow down. If you have personal questions, come over later. Right now, he says, what if a man says, I'm going to marry you. The package looks good on the outside. Right? He says, on condition that there are no disfigurements. V'nimtzu b'mumin, and found out. Eina mikudeshet. Then they're not married. Kansa stam, if they got married without any kinds of conditions, v'nimtzu b'mumin, teitzei shelo b'ktuva. So now, what exactly is a mum? Because here, we're hearing for the first time in this whole discussion, when I said in the beginning, well, I'm not sure if this is objective or subjective, here, there is such a thing called a mum. There is such a thing called a disfigurement. Incidentally, let me tell you all a secret. Where do we find a discussion about a mum being discussed? By Kohanim. Right? In the Torah, it talks about if a Kohen has this, this, and this, the Mishnah then goes in detail, what are the things that a Kohen can have that he can... A lot of very strange things, but by the way, one of the things that we're told, a Kohen may be obligated to fix those things if he can. What does that then tell you? That if a person has... by the way, that should answer the whole question right there, right? But he's getting there. Over here, we'll skip the Gemara and let's look by Tosfot, which is the end of Source 11. He writes, Chacham Oker Haneda Me'ikara, Ein Lefersh De Belashim Til Yamilta, Sharei Kadsha Amanat She'ein Bamumin, V'Hayu Bamumin De'im Kein Halach Hu Eitzo HaRofei, V'Rif'o Amai Amalakam De Mekudeshet Ela B'Kedetet Hamumin Taloi Hatam. She'af Ata La'afish Nepray, He Nim'eset Be'nav, Kishachor She'hayu Bamumin. Over here, Tosfot, which is really dealing with a separate question, which I don't want to get into, but what he brought up is, what would be the difference if she went to a rabbi and had her vows canceled? He married on condition there's no vows. Or let's say he married her, not on condition, because that would cancel from the beginning. Let's say he marries her, finds out their vows. He goes, that's it, marriage is over. And you don't get the ketuvah. She goes, 1 second, goes to a rabbi and says, listen, if I would have known such a thing, I never would have made the vows. Vows are canceled, they're still married. So again, just to realize the Gemara then gets out of this problem if she wants to cancel the vows. So then Tosfot brings up, so she can also just go to a doctor and have the mum fixed. Tosfot then says, no, that's not really the same case. The Gemara didn't discuss that at all. And Tosfot says, no, the problem there would be is that once he saw this mum, it could be that now he doesn't want to stay with her, that the trauma of this mum is going to stay, and the fact that it was fixed afterwards would it be different? The issue now is not that whole part that Tosfot went into, is that he brings up, no, the doctor can fix it without any kind of hesitation. And again, I'm saying I shouldn't have to be working so hard because we already know that a doctor, that you could, if you have a mum and you're a Kohen, you may be obligated to get the mum fixed so that you could be a functioning...
How is that?
Good. So how dangerous is going to be an interesting part of it. Let's look at what the Rav Menashe Klein does with all this. On the end of source 12, on the bottom of page 6, he writes, Od chatar dehava bezeke in mumin bekohanim demutar lefroto brufua leke mishum lo yulbash. And he says also, if a Kohen has some kind of mum, he's allowed to get it fixed. And none of that, he's supposed to get it fixed. So as I said, Rav Menashe Klein... See, what's interesting over here is that now I can go back and say, well, why didn't Rav Moshe think about this? Why didn't, the other rabbi, Rabbi Brush, why didn't he think about this? Okay, three people were given the same question, and each of them have all Talmudic literature in front of them and say, here, go solve the problem. The three of them come to the same conclusion, but they attack it differently and independently. At the end of source number 12, it could be he wasn't looking for an answer. He was looking for an analysis, and he was going to give the answer himself. He's a rabbi. It's not some guy. He's a rabbi. He's a rebbe and a leader. Could be that he did think about it. I mean, and I didn't go through all the stuff. For example, he brings up, in terms of the danger issue, he brings up a tshuva of the Avnei Nezer. This is part of his question. The Avnei Nezer was dealing with a kid whose leg was crooked, and the doctor said, we can do surgery and fix it. And the Avnei Nezer said, absolutely not. You're not allowed to have such surgery. It's dangerous. I mean, that's one of the things that's brought up. So over here, it's not some guy. It's a rabbi who, it sounds to me, more is going for consultation and therefore is asking three different rabbis for what their opinion on it is. You're right. It would not be proper to ask somebody a question and then go to somebody else. Although, it could be he writes all three of them a question, and maybe also the first one that's going to give him an answer, maybe he'll accept that as well. Theoretically, it would be wrong, but again, it's not his question. He's asking on behalf of somebody else, which takes it away from one level. At the end of source number 12, he brings in something that you are familiar with. That would be a problem. Which means he ends up over here talking about men as well. You know what? I just skipped a tshuva, didn't I? Say yes. Yes, I did. I was in source number 9 and I jumped to 1 and 12. I'll tell you what he does in 12. I'm sorry. Hold on to that thought for a second. In 9, he started off with that thing about marrying on condition. I'm skipping a little bit here. And in the second to last paragraph on page 5, he goes into this question of the guy straightening the leg or not, and he ends up saying, with all due respect, medicine is different today than 100 years ago when the Avnei Nezer dealt with this question, and what may have been considered dangerous in those days is not dangerous today. And let's read his last paragraph. Amnam be'ikara devar I yesh benituach plasti anal sakana v'hainami agunahi. This woman is, and he uses the word aguna. What does an aguna mean literally? Chained. It means chained. She is an aguna because of her nose. She feels that she cannot get married. Aluvatada she nivreit bimumin elu. She I efshar lali nase. She can't get married. Efshar lali frod atzma. Uvnot Yisrael naotain elishagalut minavelot otan. He quotes something of the Gemara that says the Jewish girls are, of course, beautiful, but all the years of exile have caused, I don't think he's making a statement about genetics over here, but he's saying it's that all the years in exile have made, which is a quote from the Gemara that after the exile things have lost their beauty. And he writes at the end, "Vaday im amar rofeisha be'ezem mum shetzarich l'taken yesh b'mishum sakana or afilo safek sakana da azasur." If the doctors say, "Hold it, this procedure is a dangerous procedure," so then again I have to look at the cost and the benefit. That if it's a dangerous procedure, just in order to look a little nicer, then he would say no. Asur lasot nituach kaze, da asur lasaken atzmo, av b'kol mokom she'ein bo mishum sakana, al pi chavat dat harofim, and if the doctors feel this is not a dangerous procedure, v'gam be'emet ki inenu ra'ot kai gavna, ki nira lefi anitaiti de'ein b'zeh shum isur. And he says, no, we've seen, and as you're right, by 1964, he says, we've seen enough cases like this. Getting a nose job, as you put it, is not considered to be a life and death procedure, and therefore, he says, doctors don't feel this is dangerous. The whole danger argument, throw it away. The Avnei Nezer's precedent 100 years ago, having surgery straightening a leg at that point is irrelevant. What he then does, he comes back in source number 12, which is the next tshuva in the book, and he brings up, what about a man having plastic surgery? What a man having cosmetic surgery? What about a man doing something to make himself look more beautiful? Then he goes into this whole thing about the Kohanim. And he says, no, Kohen's allowed to do it. No one said there's a problem because this is only something for women. And then he comes to this conclusion and he goes and he quotes the Tosfot that we saw was quoted in the other tshuva, where if somebody's embarrassed to go outside, that's considered to be pain. Pain, so therefore, a man who's embarrassed to walk outside, why would that be any different? So once again, there's no prohibition, there's precedent, and there's no difference at the end for, by Menashe Klein, between a man and a woman. Source 13 is the Tzitz Eliezer. Yesterday, I gave a class, which was the same class I gave here last year, where we discussed abortion. I don't know if you remember that class, if any of you recall it. Rav Moshe Feinstein considered abortion to be murder, and Rav Oldenburg, the Tzitz Eliezer, considered it to be allowed in all kinds of cases. In a case of a Tay-Sachs baby, Rav Moshe said it doesn't make a difference what the condition of the baby is, that you're not allowed to kill a fetus unless the mother's life is in danger. The only reason of abortion would be allowed, according to Rav Moshe, is if the mother's life is in danger. Rav Oldenburg, even in cases where unwanted teenage pregnancies, where there would be a stigma on the family, he was willing to allow an abortion in such cases. So therefore, you have over here such an incredible difference. So therefore, people would then like to conclude, okay, Rav Moshe is very strict and he's very lenient. Well, that's going to be a little superficial, because what you really need to look at is each case on a case-by-case basis. The same Rav Moshe who by abortion was not willing to allow it, as we saw, did allow cosmetic surgery. What we'll see now is that Tzitz Eliezer will not allow at all, plastic surgery, cosmetic surgery, elective surgery, any surgery other than life and death surgery. Don't ask me anything else right now. And on top of all of that, Shari Tzedek Hospital turned to him for questions. They have a plastic surgery department, so I assume that they did not ask him this question. He did not allow elective surgery. He did not allow plastic surgery. Not only that, he felt that this was a slap in the face, theoretically, of God. If God created you this way, how dare you try to change the way that you look? You are rebelling against God for such a thing. He thought this was the most horrific thing, and we'll look at a little bit of what he deals with here. Right, and therefore, also, like, unless you're saving a life, he thought it's not allowed.
And SARS doesn't enter into it.
Nothing enters into it. He wants to say the only reason surgery is allowed is because of, meaning, why is a doctor allowed to heal somebody? Don't answer that question right now. The Ramban says because of Hashavat Avida. You have to return something someone lost to them. So if somebody lost their health, you have to return their health. What if you didn't lose anything? You were born looking a little funny, so you're not returning anything. So therefore, he would say,
what would you say about, like, let's say, bone marrow, in other words, like, donating bone marrow to save someone?
That's potentially saving a life. That would be okay.
The person who would be doing it.
No, potentially saving a life is okay. Once there's pikuach nefesh involved, that he says is okay. But that potentially saves a life.
It doesn't potentially save a life.
Oh, no, it does.
Yeah,
it does.
Sure, it does.
Dialysis is very debilitating.
So, again, looking, we're doing this very quickly now. You'll notice in the first thing, which is all underlined, he says that you're just not allowed to have any kind of surgery unless it's life and death. Afterwards, where you see it underlined, he writes, Sheker hachein vehevel hayofi. Which means some people say that every week, so if that's the case, so then what are you talking about? The problem is that she's single and no one's saying it to her, but
all the other people brought sources for their reasoning.
No, his basis is the Ramban, that the only reason you're allowed to heal somebody is to save someone's life. He says you're not allowed to do a procedure unless you're saving their life. There's no Hashavat Aveda over here. He goes through. It's not a bad analysis. He writes at the bottom of the page, Alkein nira lahalacha kinal dasur lo ladam lasot lo nituach plasti. V'chein lirofei levatzei nituach kazeh. Doctor's not allowed to perform such an operation. L'shem yofi ukevdoma. V'hein larich bekan yoter mizeh. And he goes, and I don't want to go into this more than necessary.
That's the abortion thing. For the girl that she'll have mental anguish over having a baby.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
It should be somewhat similar.
I know. He doesn't think fundamentally it's not allowed. Because he knows.
She should be allowed to have the surgery. It's not like this. In other words, okay, she's allowed to have an abortion, but we're not allowed to actually perform it.
I'll read to you the start. I know. I'll read to you the part which is underlined there because you thought he's just making it up. The only time that of surgery, if you're returning something which is lost. But if you're doing something just to make someone look better, you're not returning anything. You're just doing damage to change it. According to this person's taste. To cut up their body, shechakak bo yotzro, which was formed by their creator, o kedei lechadesh ne'urav, in order to make you look younger, ulestor gzeirat malcholo shalom, and to go against the gzeira of God that we all have to get old. But lachkam v'chama, I mean, what's interesting over here is that it's just such a different approach to it. But again, I don't want to ignore it. Let's just look at one last thing, and then we'll stop for today. Maybe two things. Source 14 is a Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He writes also with a person wants cosmetic surgery. Mishum Yofi Ela Mishum Tsar Vikon Shechotmo Mishunam Od Mishal Kol Adam, a person who looks very disfigured, Vahumit Bayesh, and he's embarrassed. Efshar Lakel Kamasha Katov, and he quotes the Tosfot. He also says you can pull out your white hairs because of that. The Misha Hutsai, right? The Misha Hutsair, he's talking about a male who is young, but he's has gone prematurely white. Because this will be like a mum for him. He just wants to take away the disfigurement to be like everyone else. The Ein Zedoma Latikune Nashim, that would not be like Beged Isha. If a male wants to do something, cosmetic surgery, because he wants to look beautiful, that would be a problem. Which means disfigurement, he says, to take away, to make yourself look beautiful, he is not happy. But he says when it comes to arguing, but you're not allowed to do Chabalah to yourself, that you can't because it's not Chabalah, which means Rav Shlomo Zalman dealing with the question of a man wants to make himself look better, he says the issue of Chabalah is not a question because Chabalah, like Rav Moshe already told us, is only a problem if you're doing damage. Here you're not doing damage. Chabalah is not the problem. Is it a problem of doing what we call a feminine type of behavior, of lo tilbash, person wearing feminine clothing? He says if a person wants to look normal, it's not a problem. If a person wants to make himself look beautiful, that would be a problem. Last thing in source 15 is the Mincha Yitzchak Dayan Weiss. And if any of our English people remember Dayan Weiss when he was in Manchester still? Dayan Weiss eventually became the head of the Eidah Charedit over here. Not related to the Dayan Weiss who today is the head of the Eidah Charedit. Dayan, he's known as, by his book, the Mincha Yitzchak, and he was a son-in-law of Rabbi Breish from Zurich. He doesn't accept his father-in-law's psak, even though he says it's pretty logical, but he's not convinced. He thinks there's no problem Chabalah, but he is very bothered by the problem of Sakana. But he's very troubled by people putting themselves into danger in terms of Sakana. And for him, that's a larger issue. But when it comes down to it, let's just get to the conclusion. Rav Moshe, in the first 5 minutes of the class, Rav Moshe basically told us there's no prohibition. If there's no prohibition, then we may not be happy with it all the time, but it would be allowed. The issue of the danger is an issue, and that somebody has to always take into consideration. You know, what am I getting out of this versus what kind of situation am I putting myself into? I'll go back to the line I said before, which will be our conclusion for today, that not everything which is stupid is necessarily going to be prohibited by halacha. Sometimes Torah will require us also to have common sense, or perhaps our sense has to be more than common in order to know about how to how we should be behaving in this issue. But as far as that Rambam that we saw a couple of weeks ago, that the problem of Chabalah, if you're doing it out of anger and fighting or out of bizayon, as we saw, that ended up being, at least to Rav Moshe, the key. And later, you can also hear that in Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, that becomes the key to reveal to us that there really is no prohibition. Along the way, I think we saw something interesting. Again, how you take one question, throw it out to a bunch of rabbis who have nothing else, no one else to look at, and they all came to, I think, interesting, not that I know of, came to interesting and independent conclusions over here. But of course, all of this for everybody in this room was completely theoretical.